from the food you eat to the clothes in your wardrobe. The technical term for it is the very unsexy commodities. But they were flavour of the week in Canberra as the National Commodity Forecasting Agency, ABARES, talked drought, water and tough choices in farming. Our national rural reporters Clint Jasper and Kat Sullivan were there.
It's been a rough year for many Australian farmers, and now the government has confirmed it. It's commodity analyst ABARES reporting a 4% drop in the value of all that was grown on farm in 2018-19, coming out at $58 billion.
Now, Clint, as part of the ABARES outlook today, it's worth taking note of the average cash incomes that have been forecast for farmers. In particular, dairy farmers are projected to decrease from around $160,000 to $93,000 in just the past 12 months. That comes as the average farm income for sheep properties increased from $131,000 per farm up to around $142,000, and the average farm cash income for all broadacre farmers right across Australia is expected to fall by 18% about $173,000 per farm. But you do have to keep in mind these figures are largely buoyed by a record harvest in WA this year and the low Australian dollar, which actually depreciated by 10% against the US dollar last year.
Now, that national value of farm produce is $6 billion less than just 2 years ago, and a long way short of the National Farmers Federation target of $100 billion for the sector by 2030.
Certainly, if our agriculture sector is to hit that target, I think some pretty hard choices need to be made.
And we will get stuck into some of those hard choices in just a moment, but the Federal Agriculture Minister, David Littleproud, opened the conference with the declaration that agriculture was sexy again. Now, drought, floods, fires and some major bust-ups over farm labour and water policy may have convinced some otherwise. But Kath, you've been asking the Minister some questions about his speech this morning. What did you make of the pitch?
Was it ever sexy the first time, Clint? I'm not sure. Don't mind the dead cattle, failed crops and rotting fish of the past few months. The reason the Agriculture Minister believes his sector is sexy again is because of a range of new jobs in the sector and new types of jobs as well. He said he really wants the narrative of agriculture in Australia to change, particularly when it comes to research and development. Today he spoke about the critical role of trade deals, which of course is easy enough to do a day after signing a free trade agreement with Indonesia, but also hit home about the investment in research and development to grow the agriculture sector, which as you pointed out, worth about $58 billion in 2018-19, some way from the $34 billion industry it was just 8 years ago. Also today, the Minister has released an independent report into the research and development corporations, which has signalled change could potentially be on the way for the sector. That's something that the Labor opposition has also flagged should it be elected. Today's report, written by EY and released this morning, ranks Australia's rural innovation at number 20 in the world, despite the fact that Australia has more researchers than both the US and Netherlands, which both ranked in the top six. It's a bit hard to know what to make of that, but the Minister says that about 80% of more than 550 stakeholders surveyed as part of this review were certainly in favour of some reform to the current system. So if you're in the R&D sector, I would say all eyes peeled. The Minister was certainly really keen to point out that irrespective of any investment in research and development, there are some things that he simply can't change.
The reality is all we can do is pray for the rain and it'll come. And that's why we put nearly $7 billion into not only drought, but also now into the northwest flood disaster. So the government is making sure that we're going to support our farmers to keep this industry profitable into the future. It's a big part of our national economy and we'll be back over $60 billion and heading towards $100 billion by 2030. I'm sure that when the rain comes, the money will come.
Well, somewhat in contrast to that just add water attitude from the Minister, ABARES Executive Director Dr. Steve Hatfield-Dodds is with us now, and he's raised a series of hard questions for agriculture. Steve, droughts, extreme weather and empowered consumers mean tough choices for farmers. Is the industry set up to answer them today?
Yes, the industry is well placed. It's got a history of dealing with these tough choices. We called our conference, the Outlook Conference, Tough Choices for Agriculture, because we need to be hard-nosed about what we've achieved in the past, and it's been hard work. So agriculture has undertaken significant reforms driven in partnership essentially between government and industry to wind back old ways of doing things and to unleash the productivity. So that's been uncomfortable at times for particular sectors, and you can go through that history, but it served us well in the long run. And our real point is to achieve these sorts of big growth aspirations that the Farmers Federation and others are talking about, we need to continue that tradition. We need to not shy away from those hard choices, and we need to be clear-eyed about the long-term game.
Drought's been a headline issue over the past 12 months, and it's also thrown water management into the headlines as well. During your speech this morning, you said those who are looking for more water for irrigation and less for the environment need to consider the risks that they'll win the battle and lose the war. What did you mean by that?
So it ties into another thing I spoke about really being clear-eyed about consumer sentiment and what consumers value. And so the whole Basin Plan was inspired in part by something called the Living Murray Initiative, and at the heart of that initiative was this notion of a healthy working river. So a landscape that functions and a catchment that functions that does different things, you know, grows irrigated crops in some places, has wetlands and great places for tourism in other places, is part of the fabric of a rural community where people want to live. Where they can go fishing and expect to catch something. Now, often in the way political debate works, things get polarised and oversimplified. And our observation is that in recent years, not just months, but in recent years, you get oversimplified positions put up about how, you know, if you do X and Y, it will spell doom for, in some cases, the industry, in some cases, the environment, depends on who's talking. One of the points we make is the irrigation sector in Australia is one of the fastest growing sectors. It's really important. It delivers high value crops. It also is more capital intensive than lots of other industries. So it needs to be able to attract that investment. And to attract that investment, you need confidence that the policy settings are right and are stable. And you also need to think that consumers who are buying this stuff, consumers think those policy settings are appropriate, and you've got that social license into the future. If you treat it like a schoolyard fight and you're brawling just for your side, you might win a particular case or a particular decision or a particular outcome, but lose the consumer. And that would be very damaging for the industry.
We're talking at the conference this year, that theme of tough questions, hard choices. The challenging seasonal conditions that farmers are facing is kind of flaring up all those tension points and reducing arguments down to those, you know, sometimes unproductive but very basic points that you were mentioning just before.
Yeah, certainly when things are tough, people get cranky. Everybody knows that from their own sort of families and so forth. Australian farmers are always dealt with enormous volatility and variability. If you talk to people overseas, they just can't believe how we manage, but we do, and we're good at it. Now, the climate is shifting in the wrong direction for many bits of our agricultural fabric. The climate story has been getting tougher for us. Farmers are adapting. And so at the drought summit last October, I walked people through how a drought that would be this bad in terms of the rainfall deficit would have had a much larger negative impact than the current drought. So while things are tough now, farmers have made lots of progress in addressing that and managing that, and that's a huge slew of little changes all over the place that they've done to do that. But the outcome is still the impact on farm income is growing. So even though they're adapting, the climate change is at the moment larger than our ability to adjust and cope. So that's a continuing challenge for the sector, and it's where flexibility and innovation will be crucial long after we're all gone.
Steve Hadfield-Dodds there from ABARES, the nation's commodity forecaster. Well, as the drought drags on in eastern Australia, more and more towns are running out of water. Those that can are drilling for water to survive. Now, experts say the big increases in groundwater consumption by both towns and agriculture must be carefully monitored. And they're worried that the national network of monitoring bores that keeps track of the water beneath our feet is falling into disrepair. Rachel Carbonell reports from Coonabarabran.
Richard Thornton runs a gardening service in Coonabarabran.
People who
drive into the town, and their immediate comment is how dry and dusty and unloved it looks.
But his yard is an unexpected oasis in this dry and dusty town. He's been painstakingly bucketing grey water onto his plants every day. It's not something everyone can do, particularly the elderly.
These elderly people just simply can't do it. As a result, of course, their gardens are dying in front of their eyes. And it's really sad, and I believe that more attention should be paid to the effect that it's having on these people in a mental sense. I think it's making them quite depressed. We talk to them quite often. You find that they look out on their gardens that they've nurtured and loved for many, many years. And now all they see is things dying, and we go to maintain the garden and all we get to do is pull out the dead stuff. Yeah, I see that people are not only frustrated but getting quite despondent about the whole situation, and just asking the question, how long is this going to go on? How long do we have to be in this situation? Should we have been in this situation to start with?
This particular drought event has been somewhat harsher than what the previous drought events have been.
That's General Manager at Warrumbungle Council, Roger Bailey. Recently, there's been a small reprieve from the water shortages here. No big rains, but 6 new boreholes. After almost a year on the toughest water controls, the town has had its level 6 restriction eased to level 5.
I do understand that gardens are very important to many people. However, the main point at this point in time has been to maintain the water levels to the town so that there is basic drinking and showering, cleaning purposes, those sorts of things.
Coonabarabran is just one of the towns that's been digging for water. Walgett and Murrurundi are among those to drill new bores, and Bourke is set to do the same. Principal hydrogeologist with the New South Wales Department of Industry Water, Sue Hamilton, says groundwater use has almost doubled during the drought.
Most groundwater is actually extracted for agriculture, so irrigation being the main user of that water, and clearly when surface water allocations are dropped down, the irrigation community are looking for the groundwater. It's incredibly important because groundwater is the drought. If you're running out of surface water, that's where you go to bolster and see you through the drought situation.
Well, groundwater in Australia is extremely important. We know that in terms of the amount of water that we use, that groundwater is about 30% of Australia's total water usage across agriculture, industry, mining, and even drinking water supplies in some rural and remote towns in Australia.
Professor Craig Simmons is the director of the National Centre for Groundwater Research and Training based at Flinders University. He's concerned about how well we're tracking this increased consumption of groundwater because he says the national network of monitoring bores used to keep an eye on the water resources beneath our feet is falling into disrepair.
If we don't monitor groundwater systems, their pressure, the water levels in our aquifers, we really have very little way of telling what is happening underground with respect to the amount of water that's in the systems, the pressure in those aquifer systems, and essentially the health of those aquifer systems. And so in some ways, this is tantamount or a bit like going along to the doctor who doesn't have a stethoscope or a thermometer or a way of checking your blood pressure. These are the sort of basic tools that we would be looking at to measure our health and how things are going there. And in the same way, groundwater monitoring with boreholes is the primary and simplest way that we measure water levels and also water pressures in our aquifer system. So if we're not measuring, if we're not monitoring, we're not collecting the data that we need to be able to make a diagnosis and a prognosis about the health of our groundwater systems.
A 2012 report commissioned by the now defunct National Water Commission audited the network of 23,000 monitoring bore stations. It found that at least a quarter of those were past their use-by date, and that state and territory agencies have neither the resources nor the capacity to deal with the problem. There's concern too that the problems identified in the 2012 report have only worsened. Associate Professor Martin Anderson is the director of the Connected Waters Initiative Research Centre at the University of New South Wales.
So it's been assessed that many of these bores that were installed, ranging from about 60 to 30 years ago, are now reaching their end of their design lifespan. and so they're starting to fail. It's been estimated that if we do nothing based on sort of current conditions, in about 15 years or so, half of our monitoring boars would likely have failed. Probably the amount of money that is being spent is a fraction of the necessary budget. And I think the two reasons for that, one is that groundwater is a resource that's hidden, so out of sight, out of mind. And the other reason is there's a perception that we largely know what needs to be known about groundwater and that we already have plenty of data to use for management. I don't think it's true. I think one of the issues is as we move forward in time, there are issues like climate change, changes in our way of managing agriculture, and there's also the pressure from development of new energy resources like coal seam gas, where we are intervening with our groundwater resources, and we can't use current data to predict the effects of that intervention. So we actually need to keep monitoring to understand how climate change is going to affect our groundwater resource, how agriculture and how mining is going to impact our resource in the future.
It's estimated hundreds of millions of dollars will be needed to bring the network back up to scratch. New South Wales Regional Water Minister Niall Blair.
Well, we are taking it seriously. We do have an inspection program. I'm informed that all of our bores are fit for purpose, and we're also working out a prioritised works program. The audit will be completed in June this year, and that means that we'll have a program for the next 5 years that will prioritise which bores need to be replaced, upgraded, or just monitored.
But water expert Craig Simmons says a national strategy is needed.
This is a massive sleeping giant of an issue. And it needs a great deal of thought and a strategy around how we deal with our groundwater monitoring infrastructure, what our replacement or succession strategy, if you will, is around it.
Back in Coonabarabran, the council has been monitoring groundwater use and reporting back to state authorities. But some locals, like Richard Thornton, worry that won't be enough to safeguard the precious resource.
The biggest concern that we find amongst the whole community is the lack of security for the future. Here we are, we're looking at a situation here now which is now 15 years since the millennium drought in 2002-2003, and in 15 years, whether it be the responsibility of local council, state government or federal government, the whole issue of water security for this town, for Coonabarabran, hasn't been addressed. How much water is there? How sustainable is it, and how long are we going to be able to continue to draw bore water to sustain the town?
Rachel Carbonell with that report.